From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. This past weekend, Muslims around the world began to observe the holy month of Ramadan. Considered the most sacred month on the Islamic calendar, Ramadan calls for prayer, reflection, and fasting from sunrise to sunset. But this year, Ramadan comes at a fraught time, amid an ongoing war between Israel and Hamas in Gaza, in which some 30,000 Palestinians have been killed, with many more wounded and even more still facing starvation. Joining me now to talk about all of this is Dua El-Dessouky, a Palestinian activist and a member of the CU Muslim Action Committee. That's CU Champaign-Urbana. Dua, welcome back to The 21st Show.
Thank you so much for having me again.
We're also joined by Bara Sada, who is also Palestinian. He works as a psychiatry resident at Carl Hospital in Urbana and, in fact, has been a resident of the area for more than 20 years. Bara, welcome to you as well.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dua, I want to begin with you. We last talked in December last year. Next month is going to mark a half year since this current phase of the conflict started. I just want to begin by asking, how are you? How are you feeling?
To be honest, it's been tough, Brian. These past, you know, we're at like 5.5 months now. We've entered the 6 months, basically. It's been really tough. What we're seeing coming out of Gaza, the carnage and the destruction and the amount of disdain that we're seeing from the Israeli regime and the IDF soldiers towards Palestinians is something that's been really difficult to witness. And then coupling that with what we're hearing from our politicians here and the media, it's still a lot. It's been a lot.
But I want to ask you the same question. How about you? What have you been feeling?
Yeah, echoing what Dua has been saying, it's been extremely tough and difficult. I never expected this year to go this way, and I never expected that this conflict would last this long, almost reaching 6 months. It's been tough, especially since I got some family in the area in Gaza, and then as well as just here in the United States, just seeing how some of our local representatives and how some of the people who I put my trust in and I thought would be wanting to do the right thing, how they've been acting and how they've been mainly just focused on doing things that have just been harming the area and just making it worse for little profit.
So, Dua, can I ask, how do you feel going about your life in Champaign-Urbana? Do you feel safe going to mosque, just living your everyday life?
Yeah, I mean, the Champaign-Urbana area has... So one of the things that we've seen, you know, come out of the last, you know, this assault on Gaza is a beautiful local movement here where we've seen a lot of support for Palestinian rights and Palestinian solidarity. We've seen groups formed literally around this topic to continue this, you know, this action, to continue educating everybody. And so that has been very... that has been very soothing and almost healing to kind of be a part of and to see that coming out of this. You know, I wish it wouldn't have had to form around what we're seeing right now and all of this death. But at the same time, the community, the broader community in, you know, in Champaign, for example, on March 2nd, we had one of the largest protests seen in the area calling for a ceasefire. There was almost 700 people on the streets of Champaign, you know, doing this. Almost every week we have some kind of event, an educational event or a protest or some kind of action. And so we've seen a lot of community come together. We've seen a diverse group of people come together. And that's been something that has provided at least a little bit of solace.
Bara, you mentioned to one of our producers that you've been in Champaign-Urbana for more than 20 years now. I wonder how your experience, you know, living in downstate Illinois has changed over that time, and especially in the past five and a half months.
Mm-hmm. It's actually been around 20 years. We're only at year 18. Still, we're close to 20, though.
Thank you for the correction. I appreciate it.
During the past, it's been good. I mean, I grew up here back in the, back when I was, in elementary school, going through the process. I've seen a lot of change, because at the time, I remember I was in third grade. I was at Bottomfield Elementary School in Champaign, Illinois, and one of my teachers at that time had presented and been like, oh, the Twin Towers were attacked. Why was it attacked? Oh, because there was Muslims who attacked it. They're terrorists. So I've seen a large shift in that type of narrative, across, from the schools, from teachers and even just from people that I grew up with shifting. And people became, I think there's been a huge positive improvement in the community, especially towards Arabs and towards Muslims and how they look at them, how they view them and what they've learned about them. Especially, I think, as the Muslim community has grown here, we've become classmates, we've become colleagues, we've become coworkers, we've become the person at the grocery store. So it's definitely improved, and I'm happy with how it's improved during these, like, during the last 18 years.
Let me remind listeners, if you're just joining us, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking with two Palestinian Illinoisans about how they've been experiencing what's been happening over in Gaza. And we're also going to be talking about Ramadan, which began this past weekend. If you want to join our conversation today, you can do that at 800-222-9455. Maybe you are observing Ramadan this year. How does it feel amid the ongoing conflict over there? Again, 800-222-9455 is the number. We're talking about this with Dua Eldesouky, a Palestinian activist and member of the CU Muslim Action Committee, and Bara Sada, who is a psychiatry resident at Carl Hospital in Urbana. And Bara, let's talk about that. Let's talk about Ramadan. Does it feel different this year?
The best way to describe it is bittersweet, for sure. It's been kind of a ride. I mean, Ramadan is a month that all 2 billion Muslims across the world look forward to, and we count down to it almost from the day it ends to the month, like to the day it starts again. And we really, really look forward to it. But at the same time, this year has definitely been bitter, and it's not just the Palestinian Muslims, but you could feel it even in the mosque here, like at the local Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center. You could feel a bit of the tension and the sadness in the air, because people are feeling really sad about what's going on in Palestine and Gaza, to the point that there's even a special thing they do during prayer sometimes in times of hardship, which is basically you make a extra supplication in order to ask for relief from a huge disaster happening, especially for like the Muslim Ummah or somewhere around the world. And they've actually been implementing that since October and have been keeping it up during Ramadan, despite there being so many people there, just to show the importance of what's been going on. So it's been very bittersweet. It's made it a bit, I'm happy it's here. I'm excited for it, just like I would any holiday. But at the same time, it is bitter as well, because we know that people back in Gaza, just while I get to go home, break my fast, eat a nice meal, go get some foods from Cravings or Guido's or some other place, people in Gaza may not have a meal to eat.
Yeah, and I do want to come back to that point, but do it. Let me ask you the same question. I mean, how is Ramadan, you know, the beginning of Ramadan, different for you in 2024 than it would have been, say, in 2023?
Yeah. So, excuse me. So on Monday, which is when the first day of fasting was for us, I found myself really reflecting on a few things, and I wrote a little something. I submitted it to the News Gazette, to the editor. I don't know if it'll get published, so I'm just going to read it now because it really puts all of my thoughts in order. And it's titled, "Can You Sight the Moon Through Bomb-Filled Skies?" Every year, on the night before Ramadan, a group of Muslims in the CU go out to see if they can sight the new moon. They find a park or an open field with a good view of the horizon and gather around, some with binoculars, but many without. It's a joyous occasion. Children come along, and when the new moon is spotted, hugs and kisses celebrate the blessed month of Ramadan. This year, though, I can't help but wonder if those in Gaza can spot the new moon amongst the bombs in their skies. This year, we welcome this blessed month with heavy hearts, knowing our brothers and sisters have been starving for months. This year, though we welcome the month and solace it brings, we mourn the added hardships they will go through in Palestine. Every year, the start of Ramadan marks an escalation of the violence Palestinians experience at the hands of the Israeli regime, from limitations placed on worshippers trying to make it to Al-Aqsa Mosque to added checkpoints throughout the West Bank to hamper down on spirits. This year is no different. It's only been a day, and Israeli soldiers are preventing Muslims from entering Al-Aqsa. Though thousands of miles separate us, our hearts and prayers will be with those in Palestine during this blessed month.
Talk about your daily practice. What is your daily life like when you are in the month of Ramadan?
Yeah, so during the month of Ramadan, we, like you mentioned, we fast from sunup to sundown. And so there is a complete switch in eating schedule and sleeping schedule, because we end up waking up a little bit earlier to eat something before the fast starts. And then after we break our fast, a lot of times there's a big communal aspect. So people will go to the Islamic Center or the mosque. And there's also extra prayers at that time called Taraweeh, which is basically just an extra set of prayers that can be prayed in congregation or alone. But again, that communal aspect of Ramadan is very important. So you find people are switching their life. Your circadian rhythm goes out the window, basically, because you're sleeping so differently. And people tend to... You end up finding yourself pretty tired physically, but spiritually it's so like nourishing and refreshing that you're just able to kind of soldier through it until you know, towards the end of that month. It's kind of like Bara said, it's like that bittersweet feeling where it's difficult, but it's also equally beautiful. And then of course, like you mentioned, this year it's doubly difficult because we know that like Palestinians in Gaza don't have anything to break their fast on. You know, the videos that are coming out of like children foraging through leaves just to try and find a tomato so that they can break their fast. And you find, you know, all of this thing is also something that's very difficult to witness. It's really changed my own perspective on food and eating and food waste and just being a lot more also aware and cognizant of that.
But how about you? How do you, make preparations and plan to get through an entire day as a busy resident? I know residents often spend a lot of time on their feet.
Yeah, so for me, thankfully, the fast starts at dawn. So that means I'm usually up at around like 5:20 eating. And then today, I think we stopped at 5:52 is when it officially started a.m. So then after that, I just go take a quick nap, go to work, and then just honestly, I continue work as usual. All business must get done, especially at the hospital. So you can't just not see somebody just because you're tired. So business goes on as usual. I see all my patients. Usually lunch break, though, is a bit nicer because it means I have an hour then to work on any other extra stuff that I have to do. Continue work, get off work. Usually I'll work on extra stuff, that family tasks that I must do. And then the best part, though, is the evening. Once sunset hits, Ramadan is a huge communal. It's a time for a huge communal gatherings. It's a time where you go, you eat with others. And it's a time where the breaking the fast is very nice. But even after you're done breaking the fast, the night prayers, when you go to the mosque in the evening, it's just packed. And it's honestly exciting because you're kind of there from like 7:30, like around like 8 p.m. to like around 10 p.m. And it's just filled with everybody from really elderly people to just kids, all there like either praying or playing. And it's just it's like a nice festive environment usually.
And I know, and I promise we will come back to the idea of the starvation being experienced around the world, halfway around the world. But food is a big, can you talk about traditional foods that you mark the breaking of the fast with?
Yeah, so Muslims... globally, all Muslims typically will break their fast on dates. And for those that might not be as familiar, the date is just, it's a small little fruit. I think everybody is familiar with it now, so hopefully don't have to. You know, dates went through their like superfood phase a few years ago, so I think everybody knows what a date is. But yeah, typically that's what's recommended to break your fast on. If you don't have dates, you break it on water or milk. And so that's a prime time. You won't find probably a Muslim household without dates. Because that's what we break our fast on. In terms of the actual food, of course, it's going to differ, from culture to culture. For Palestinians and many Arabs, there's a special dessert that we eat in Ramadan called qatayif or atayif, and they're in English roughly translated into Ramadan pancakes. And basically what that looks like is it's almost like a pancake dough. It's not a pancake dough, but it's almost like a pancake dough. Then you stuff it, you fry it, or you can bake it, and then you dip it in like a simple syrup. And that's usually something that a lot of Palestinian and other Arab families will enjoy during the month of Ramadan.
I have to add, if you haven't had it before, it's a must. You must have it at least once in your life. It's kind of like that first time you have baklava for the first time, where it's like you kind of get like the zing. It's just like that.
And Bara, are there any non-food traditions specific to Palestinian Muslims?
Specific to Palestinian Muslims, not really. More of a global one, though, is that usually a lot of households, and especially here in America, a lot of households will like decorate and put up like little lanterns or other stuff just to make a bit of a festive environment. In the Middle East, it's also the same way, especially in Palestine. And I know they're doing that there now a lot in order, like, especially like with a lot of the kids are doing that as well now, even though the conditions are like that there, just to create a more festive environment.
All right. We are going to take a break here on the 21st show, and we will continue our conversation about Ramadan at a time of war in Gaza. And we are speaking about that with Barasada, who is a psychiatry resident at Carl Hospital and a longtime resident of Champaign-Urbana, and Dua El-Dessouky, a Palestinian activist and a member of the CU Champaign-Urbana Muslim Action Committee. If you want to join our conversation today, 800-222-9455 is the number. That's 800-222-9455. I also want to mention a segment we are working on for next week. We would like your help with that. March 21st, next Thursday, we are going to mark 4 years since Governor Pritzker's stay-at-home orders took effect in the early days of the COVID-19 pandemic. For the millions of people who have died from COVID, there are thousands more who've been living for months or even years with long COVID. If you or someone you know is dealing with that, how has it affected you? Let us know at 217-300-2121. That's our voicemail line anytime, 217-300-2121. More to come here on the 21st show. Please stay with us. This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about the Islamic holy month of Ramadan, which began this past weekend, and specifically how it's affecting people in Illinois amid the ongoing war between Israel and Hamas in Gaza, in which some 30,000 Palestinians have been killed. We're talking about this with Dua El-Dessouky, who's a Palestinian activist and a member of the CU Muslim Action Committee, and Barasada, who's works as a psychiatry resident at Carl Hospital in Urbana, also Palestinian and has lived in the area for nearly 20 years. You can join our conversation today at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. So, Bara, Dua mentioned this earlier, but the idea of fasting, it hits differently. Can you talk about that, especially as we have had these reports from the United Nations and other agencies that there really is a starvation crisis happening in Gaza?
Mm-hmm. Do you want me to focus more on what the starvation is like over there?
Well, I mean, if you want to talk about that, you're welcome to, but I just wonder how you are experiencing this daily hunger, right? That's mm-hmm. a part of your spiritual practice, while also thinking about what people are experiencing, not by choice, right?
Mm-hmm. So for me, fasting is, actually in the religion, it says there are some people who go through all of Ramadan, and the only thing they get out of it is just hunger and thirst. So Ramadan is not just a fast of just from food and water, but it's also a fast of the tongue, being careful with what you say, and as well as a fasting of the eyes, being careful of what you're seeing, and pretty much fasting and trying to be the best that you can be during this month. So for me, I feel the hunger, and it kicks in pretty early for me. Usually at around 10 a.m. it kicks in for me. And with that hunger, though, it's a reminder that I am blessed because I know where my food is coming at the end of the day. And it, I guess, gives me confidence and it gives me hope to do better in all the work that I'm doing because I have the opportunity to do that and I have the energy to do that while there are others around the world who don't. As well as, it's also as you go through your day and I guess you're trying to be the best that you can, it makes you more cautious of what you're saying, what topics you're even talking about, who you're talking to, and whether or not you're doing more harm or more good in what you're doing around. So for me, it's actually made me a bit more vocal about the Palestinian issue, just because I'm realizing that I have a tongue, there's something that I can do, there's something that I could educate people about. It's not just Palestine, but also some of the other conflicts around the world, but especially for me specifically, because I'm so connected to it, the Palestinian conflict, and especially with how dire it's become on the world stage and how much videos are coming out of it. That's the one that I've been a bit more vocal about.
How have people been reacting to your decision to be more vocal about this?
For the most part, it's been positive. The Champaign-Urbana community is in general a very positive community. And for me, I actually look a bit Arab. even though when I was younger, I would pass as a white Caucasian normal student. But as I got older, my beard grew out. It's still kind of short, but so I kind of don't pass for it anymore. But so it depends. So if I don't bring it up, somebody will bring it up to me. Like, for example, I walked into a patient room one day, and I'm dealing with psychiatry, so I'm not too offended by what they say. But like one of the patients, he had the news on, he was watching the war, and he looks at me and he goes, Israel needs to finish its job. And I was like, dude, I didn't say anything yet, dude. Yeah. But I mean, obviously, you know, you're still going to go there. You're still going to see the patient. You're going to do everything they need for them. I mean, it's a psychiatric patient, so it's like, it's fine. But so if I don't bring it up, somebody's going to bring it up to me. And if I don't bring it up, sometimes like we get the stares. So it's better to, you know, just, I realize that it's just better, especially with my classmates and, not my classmates, sorry, my colleagues, my coworkers and everybody
fellow
around
residents,
me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. My fellow residents, just better to just bring it up.
Yeah. It's maybe explainable. I don't know that I would say it's fine, but I appreciate the attitude you bring to that. I wonder what you're thinking as you're listening to that.
I'm thinking that, so I'm a registered dietitian by profession, and I don't have like an in-person circle of like, you know, colleagues that I'm dealing with day in and day out, but I do have a large presence online and on social media, and I've seen, you know, similar kind of responses. You find people that are, you know, I had a lot of friends that were not Arab, were not Muslim, were not Palestinian. And then in 2021, when we had like the Sheikh Jarrah and the forced expulsion of Palestinians out of their homes from East Jerusalem, you know, I was becoming very vocal and I would speak up, and I literally lost friends. I dietitians that I thought were my friends that I would normally socialize with online. We had this, you know, the circle. They didn't even message me to say, hey, how are you doing? I know this is something that's deeply personal for you. And I feel that here this time as well, whether it's from online or even like some of my neighbors, just checking in, like it's a deeply personal issue. My neighbors know I'm Palestinian. It's not something that I don't, you know, speak about. And then to just kind of act like everything is normal, knowing full well 40,000 Palestinians have died, if you're including those under the rubble, 15,000 to 18,000 of those are children. You know, another 15,000 children have been orphaned, and not even think that, hey, my neighbor might be going through something. This might be something that's difficult. Let me just check in on them, regardless of how they feel about everything. That's been something that's new to me, and that's difficult. That's been a difficult aspect of this.
Do you read it as indifference or fear of saying the wrong thing, or maybe feeling like they're not on the same side of this divide as you are?
To me, I read it as viewing me as another. You know, I they were my friend when it was convenient, and now that I am showing, you know, views that either they don't agree with or whatever it is, I'm outside. I'm an outsider now, despite the fact that, you know, some of these neighbors have been to my house. They've eaten from the same food that I have, you know, I've fed them. I've gone to their house. They know my children. I know their children. So to feel like such an outsider to their lives after sharing this is I don't really know what it is exactly, but it's something that's been very difficult.
I think that's a good segue. One of our colleagues at our producing station, Illinois Public Media, has been collecting perspectives on the conflict from people in Champaign-Urbana. The sound was collected by May Antar, and our producer, Jose Zapata, edited them together into this montage. Let's take a listen.
My name is Mark Sneal.
My name is Elizabeth Soteropoulos.
My name is Evelyn Reynolds.
I'm Stuart Levy.
Hamas is clearly stating that it wants to see the end of the state of Israel. People in the Israeli government are clearly stating they don't want to see a Palestinian state ever happening.
So when I think of Israel's occupation of Palestine and any form of colonization that displaces people from their land and separates children from their families, I can relate from my own lane, of course, to this pain.
My identity as a Black person or an African, a person of African descent living in this country has certainly shaped my outlook on Palestine and also my outlook on conflicts all over the world, because it resonates.
Hamas
committed an atrocity. They did, in attacking civilians. Israel now is committing a much greater atrocity.
Dua, talk about what you felt from the broader Champaign-Urbana community, beyond maybe your circle of friends or former friends and neighbors.
Yeah, so like I mentioned earlier, we have this movement that's growing here, and that's been beautiful. We've been speaking to Urbana City Council about passing a ceasefire resolution, and we've been there since January 8th, week after week after week. And what we've seen is that the people that come out and say, we need a ceasefire, a permanent, immediate ceasefire now, that speak up for Palestinian rights and self-determination, is a beautiful group that is very diverse. It's racially diverse, it's ethnically diverse, it's age-wise diverse, it's, you know, professionally diverse. And so that's been something that's really beautiful. But the response that we're getting from, you know, some of our council members and the city council as a whole has been disheartening. You know, we have this petition that 1,300 people have signed saying they want a ceasefire. We have this petition, this people showing up week after week after week. We had 700 people on the street. And yet, you know, we keep being told that this ceasefire resolution is divisive. It's dividing the community, when really, in reality, all we're seeing is that there is this diverse group of people that is just coming together, and it's continuing to grow.
You know, Dua, talk about why this we talked about this effort to get the Urbana City Council to endorse a ceasefire resolution on our program last week briefly. But talk about why it's important from your perspective as an activist. I mean, it's, you know, I think there might be people out there who say, look, Urbana doesn't have a vote on the UN Security Council. Why does it matter to you that your city does this?
Yeah, so there's a number of reasons that this is for this to be important. One of them is that, one, we've been trying to speak to our federal representatives. We've been asking them to call for a permanent ceasefire, and they have not done so. They are not listening to the amount of callers that they have coming through. And then another one is that we don't live in this, like, yes, you know, Mayor Diane Marlin might not have world leaders on speed dial, but the Urbana community is connected. The world as a whole is connected. You know, citizens of Urbana contribute approximately $425,000 each year through federal taxes. So the U.S. Department of Defense can provide Israel with $3.8 billion in military aid. So yes, she may not have those leaders on speed dial, but Urbana is not disconnected. We have a Caterpillar research facility affiliated with UIUC right here in Urbana. And Caterpillar is directly affiliated with the Israeli regime and the expulsion of Palestinians from their home. UI's investment portfolio also includes weapon manufacturers like Raytheon and Boeing, and I don't know how to pronounce those names. But basically, you know, this is why it's important. It's important because our community cares about it, and we've shown that by showing up week after week after week. And it's also important because the world is connected. And the more cities that can pass a ceasefire resolution, which 70 have across the nation, the more the message gets further and further to our representatives, you know, higher ups.
Bara, what about you? Do you feel like you would want to see more activism from local government officials on this? What some people would say, it's an international issue. Why should we get involved?
I think many years in the past, we could have technically been able to say, as the Champaign-Urbana community and as the USA, that we're not involved. But at this point, we are direct. Like, our leaders are part of our leaders in the U.S., like Biden, Blinken, and several others are directly providing military arms, weapons, and other stuff to Israel. And it's not like they're providing like food or defense items, like construction materials. No, it's straight up like bullets, bombs, and other stuff. So they're actually part of, in essence, they are part of the genocide that is happening there. Us residents, it's our money that's being used to pay for those bullets. And I don't even want to think about how many taxpayer dollars of my personal ones have gone to bullets, but we're the ones at this point, we're technically complicit in genocide, if you would actually look at it like from an international perspective, because while we aren't directly paying for bullets, we are the ones, like, it is our money that is being used to pay for it. So I think it really does affect the Champaign-Urbana community right now, because it's something that we are directly, like, it's almost just two nodes away from us being directly involved with the conflict. So yeah, I was incredibly happy and surprised with the support we got from the local community, where it wasn't just the Muslim Action Committee who even started this. It was other people in the community, people who were black, white, brown, and a whole bunch of other colors, as well as from different backgrounds, educational backgrounds, and just very diverse group who came together and said, hey, we want to start this, and then came to us and asked, what do you guys think? What's your opinion as Palestinians? So I was incredibly, incredibly happy with the support that we got and for people recognizing that we are involved with this and that's why we have to speak up. And for people who say it's dividing the community, we have to remember that even slavery, for example, that was an issue that divided the nation. It doesn't mean just because something is seen as controversial and may cause people to become unhappy, doesn't mean that it's something that shouldn't be talked about. It actually sometimes means that we have to talk about it more and come to a consensus based off of it.
Dua, just a few minutes left in our time together. I want to come back to this idea of Ramadan and it being different this year. What do you hope, especially I guess people who are listening who are not Muslim, what do you hope they take away from this holy month?
I would say that, you know, the value of this month is being more connected on, or one of the values, of course, it's not only one, is being more connected with the world population and those that may not have the same privileges that we have. And so when we think of the Palestinians right now and the amount of starvation that they're going through, you know, a UN special report said that we've never seen a civilian population made to go hungry so completely and so quickly. Never in modern history, we've never seen children pushed into malnutrition so quickly, never. And so for people that are thinking about, oh, this idea of, you know, voluntarily giving up food, recognizing that that is something, a choice that we can make here. It's a privilege that we have here, but it's not necessarily something that people throughout the entire world have that option.
And Bara, what about you? What do you hope your non-Muslim fellow residents, fellow citizens of Illinois, fellow people of the world, what do they hope you hope they take away from this?
I'm hoping for the Illinois residents, the next time they stop at a Casey's or a Circle K, they skip the Polar Pop and just see how they feel just skipping that one tiny thing, and then realize that there are people all over the world, and especially in Gaza, who just don't even get to eat food, and just see just how that Polar Pop makes you feel and recognize that that's amplified for people all over the world. Also, at the same time, I would enjoy it if they know any Muslims, be sure to wish them a happy Ramadan as well.
Well, on that note, I will say Ramadan Mubarak to both of you. Thank you so much for being with us and sharing your perspectives with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you for having us.
Dua El-Dessouky is a Palestinian activist and a member of the CU Muslim Action Committee. Bara Sada is a resident in psychiatry at Carl Hospital in Urbana. Coming up on the show, we will be talking, changing subjects. We will be talking with a former Illinois public radio host turned author who now has a new book about promoting books. That's coming up here on the 21st Show after a short break. Stay with us.